This is what cosmologists did back in early 80s. And let us assume that our scalar field somehow is only time dependent. There is no Lachin homogeneities. And in this case, T00 component, from this Lagrangian, we can construct an energy momentum tensor, an energy momentum tensor constructed from this Lagrangian goes like that. And if we have conformal coupling, there are many more terms, which are pretty ugly. Anyway, for a homogeneous time-dependent scalar field, T00 is given by phi dot square plus V, kinetic energy of the scalar field, when it rolls, and potential energy of the scalar field. And the pressure, which is minus T11 minus T22, isotropic, P33, is equal, the pressure is equal 1/2 phi dots minus V. And if somehow phi dot square much less than potential energy, what we will have pressure approximately equal to energy density. And if we can achieve this, it will be great. And what we're going to do next is we consider how it looks like generic solution of the Einstein equations with the scalar field. And again, let's begin with the homogeneous time-dependent geometry only. And we have five dot dot. We have first equation for the scalar field, right? So we have a standard box operator. Just reminding you how it's constructed. We have a metric, J mu nu, and this is a basic expression. And we, if we substitute Friedman metric here, the Friedman metric, again, yesterday it was here, then this expression goes like phi dot dot plus 3h phi dot plus the force acting on the scalar field. And the Friedman equation, 3h is equal to 8 pi m Planck square, 1/2. So yesterday I was using Newton gravitational constant, and today I jump from g to square of the Planckian, because we will measure scalar field in units of the Planckian mass. It will be convenient to work with this. Right, so this is a system of equation. And we have to solve it. There are other combinations, but two of them most interesting. So one of the combination, which is in the Einstein equations, is this one. So of course, all of those equations are compatible. This is 0-0 equation. This is a combination of the Einstein equations, and this is 0-1 Einstein equations. This equation tells us that because phi dot square is always positive, that Hubble constant is always decreasing. It's monotonically decreasing function. So this is very generic things. The Hubble constant cannot be increasing functions, also always decreasing function in classical cosmology. Right, so we want to solve these equations, and Hubble parameter is A dot over A. This is nonlinear system of equations, because here is nonlinear term, this term easily may be nonlinear, and how we solve this equation. When I was undergraduate student in Moscow, I took class from Zildovich. Zildovich play in Soviet Union the same role as Feynman play in North America. And at the end of the class, that was summer of 1980, we didn't know about inflation yet. Zildovich co call me and ask, can you consider the system of the scalar field in expanding universe? And I asked him, what exactly would you like to know? He said, the whole picture. And I thought he was joking. It's impossible to reveal the whole picture. But it was very, and a few months later, inflation was discovered in this system. So this system of equation contains inflationary solution. And therefore, we understand it's a very rich system, but there is much more. There is rich dynamics, prior inflation and after inflation. And it turns out that there is a way to address the question about the whole picture, the whole solutions of this system of equation. We realized it a few years later. And to do this, we will use the method which I was trying to describe yesterday, method of the face portraits. What we do, we look at this system as a dynamical system, and we say, okay, we have variables phi dot and phi and Hubble parameter, and all of those equations can be rewritten in the form d phi dt equal phi dot d phi dot dt is equal minus 3 phi dot h minus v. So this equation, right? And equation for h, this equation also can be rewritten. It will be something like dh dt is equal minus 1 half phi dot square plus 1 6. One third of the potential minus h squared. Turns out it can be written this way. And remember yesterday I was telling you that if we have the system of equation in the form dy dx is equal q dx dt in the form of p, then we can continue d zeta dt is equal something else. And those functions on the right hand side are functions of our variables, but not time, then there is a very powerful method to see the whole structure of solutions without solving it. But it's nice. This method is topological by nature. And what we have to do, we have to equalize to zero right-hand side and find the points, the critical points in this case, for x, y, and zeta, where simultaneously all right-hand side terms equal to zero, and there will be a critical point of the system, and then we have to linearize the system around those critical points to understand the character of the critical points, their focus points, attractor, repulsor, and saddle points, and then just connect them with separatrixes if they are around, and the whole picture emerges. In cosmology, therefore, our phase space of all solutions will be three-dimensional phase space. So we will have three-dimensional phase space, h, phi dot, and phi. I will proceed with a specific example when potential, the method is very generic, and potential will take m squared phi squared over 2. It's very simple. First thing we noticed that equation for the constraint equation, the Friedman equation, right, which is not here. I didn't use this equation yet. The Friedman equation says that our solutions are located at the hypersurface where 3h squared minus 8 pi m Planck squared phi dot square minus m square phi square is some numerical coefficient is equal to zero. This is a hyperboloid. So it's a hyperboloid, and all solutions are located on the two-dimensional hypersurface. So the phase space of the system is three-dimensional, but hyperboloid is fixing the relationship between them. So it defines a two-dimensional hypersurface. And the two-dimensional hypersurface of the solution looks like this one. You see there are two branches. Upper branch corresponds to Hubble parameter positive. It corresponds to expanding universe. But no one told us that there is no contracting solutions, right? We can reverse time and there will be another branch. So one solution, one branch of solution corresponds to this one, another one corresponds to this one. There is only one critical point at the finite values of H, phi, and phi dot, this one. And this point corresponds to the focus. It has the character of the focus. Because we have two branches, we can concentrate on one of them and ignore the second one. And it'll be nice to project the upper cone, right, to the plane phi dot over phi. So this picture, the lower plot, is the projection of the trajectories at the cone. If I ignore behavior at infinities, what I will get is this plot, phi dot over phi, right? Two families, one family purple and another red. And purple shows what happens. Difference, there is also radiation is added. It shows that radiation doesn't matter much. And we see that there are two separatrixes going from the center, phi dot over phi. It's a focus point. And separatrixes are going to infinity. So we cannot ignore infinity. We shall analyze infinity. And the way to analyze infinity is to bring them to the finite distance. We did yesterday this with the Penrose diagram, right? We take infinite Minkowski spacetime and map to finite. In the theory of dynamical system, this trick is known as a Poincaré mapping. And if we have points at the infinite distance, we can use new coordinates to map them in the finite one. So let's take our two-dimensional vector, phi dot phi. I'll denote it as a two-dimensional vector. And what we do, Poincaré mapping, is just take this one and divide by 1 over r, where r will be square root of phi dot square plus phi square. So I'm dropping all dimensions here just to follow the structure. And this Poincaré mapping allows to bring infinity to the finite distance, to the circle. And the answer is shown here. Let me zoom it and a bigger plot. Okay. And you see there points at infinity, critical points at infinity. R1 and R2 are repulsor. S1 and S2 are endpoints which connect focus at the middle with focus point. And the magic of phase portrait is that trajectories are not intersecting, and they cannot cross separatrixes. Therefore, if I know separatrixes, I know topology of the solutions. So what happens, my solutions, and this exhausts all possible solutions. So my solutions all start at either at R2 or R1, and it's just the day of the initial conditions goes, right? It has nothing to do with expansion or contraction. This is all expanding branch. The trajectories, it's a flow of time, a lot of trajectories is shown by arrows. And all of them, sooner or later, approach separatrixes. And they're moving along of separatrixes. And because, and they're moving and actually attracting towards separatrixes. The separatrix works topologically as an attractor. And all of them are ending up at the green point focus. Now, physics. The separatrixes corresponds to inflationary solutions. The focus point, green one, corresponds to oscillation of the scalar field after inflation. Inflation dynamically ends. And the blue points, repulsor, they correspond to initial singularities. So it says that complete solutions, they always start with singularity, and they very quickly, very short time interval, reaching asymptotic, intermediate asymptotic inflation. So there's no way to avoid inflation. Inflation is imprinted in the system. And because the nature of this is topological, I can change my potential. I can take lambda phi to the four, any other forms of the potential, I'll get the same picture. So because topology is a phase portrait, force us for trajectories to go nearby separatrixes and have inflation. We can understand in details what is going on around each point there. Nearby repulsor at the beginning, we have conditions where kinetic terms are pretty large. The terms of this type, they are much larger than the potential term. And in this case, equation of state, P is equal epsilon. We have a stiff equation of state. And for stiff equation of state, you can figure out energy density goes like a 6th power of the scalar factor. And scalar factor itself goes as time in power 1/3. This very unusual equation of state, and neither matter radiation provides this. So we have this with the scalar field. By the way, nearby those points, it's a singularity point. Because power law corresponds to singularity. The generic solution is anisotropic, the Kasner solution, okay, right? So I'm ignoring it just for simplicity to put everything in one picture. But remember that nearby blue points, solutions are anisotropic. The Kasner is amazingly universal. When I was a graduate student, I was so impressed with Kasner's solution, and I wanted to read his original paper in 1922. And in Moscow, there were no such old journals. They were sent to archives far away. And it took a one-day journey just to find that it's 2 pages paper with absolutely no details and no physical insight. Just the fact, okay, just notice that there is an isotropic solution. And that's it. I was so disappointed. Anyway, it's absolutely great solution. Right, so as far as we're going towards red separatrixes, what happens? We find that the second derivative became small relatively to this term. The Hubble friction is very big. This term starts to work very significantly. And around this solution, P is equal approximately minus epsilon. And the scalar field is changing slowly. Here, initially, scalar field is changing as a log. Here, scalar field is linearly changing, and the scalar factor of the universe is expanding exponentially. It's expanding not exactly exponentially like that, but it's expanding almost like that. The scalar factor is expanding quasi, it's expanding quasi-exponentially. H Hubble parameter is slightly changing with time. You see, phi dot is changing with time. If phi dot is changing with time, Hubble is changing with time. It's not exactly constant. But h dot is much, much less than h squared. For all Friedman solutions with the power law dependence, like 1/3, 1/2, or 2/3, h dot is order of h squared. For inflation regimes, it's not like that. And for the inflation regime's geometry, it's not exactly De Sitter geometry. It's quasi De Sitter geometry. It's not exactly De Sitter geometry. Right, anyway, when this term is small, kinetic term is small, friction is large, this equation of state takes place. And when we are at the end of the separatrixes we brought over there, we have oscillations. This Hubble term is small, and our equation is very close to the equation of oscillator. and the scalar factor of the universe behaves very similar to that for matter. And pressure of the system behaves like some constant slight dependence on time, very quickly oscillating as we are rotating around focus point. Scalar field is oscillating, so pressure is actually oscillating function. But if we take average value of the pressure, it will get to zero. Right? So overall solution of the scalar field is this time, the scalar field is just as rock falling very quickly here. Then it starts to slow roll during inflation. When it ends, it starts to oscillate. Inflation ends dynamically. So inflation is a finite event. It may be very long, it may be very short, depending where exactly we hit the red separatrixes, right? And we know it should be bigger than whatever number we're folding to provide our universe. So what is nice with the dynamics of the scalar field? It gives us intermediate effective cosmological constant, which will which makes space-time isotropic. There is an interesting piece of theoretical physics. What happens if we change a little bit the potential? If we consider potential, which can be a negative potential. In this case, the story is pretty different. Let me throw it. Let me take potential. Let me take, sorry, I finished with dynamics of inflation. Just a comment about interesting possibility. If we take our potential and add a constant piece and allow this constant piece to be negative, such that our potential can be slightly negative. So scalar field potential is negative. What I will tell you next is correct for any potentials which somewhere can go to the negative territory. Right? So what happens if we consider cosmology with a negative potential? Very interesting thing happens. This constraint equation acquire extra piece, V naught, constant piece. And instead of having two cones, my face portrait will be located on the hypersurface, which is now is this type of hyperboloid. There are not two cones, just this type of hyperboloid. And all my face trajectories are lying here like that. Right? And there are again no focus point at the middle. The points of infinity are the same, but the branch of expansion and branch of contraction, they are not separated anymore. They're talking to each other. And amazing thing happens in this universe that we are starting our dynamic from above, as it was before for the system when potential was positive, right? We're all approaching the point where we expect to find a focus point. But there is no focus point. And instead, we're going through the hole and going to another branch. The face portrait of the dynamical system not necessarily is a plane. And it's something which should be discovered. If you have a dynamical system, you may expect that the face portrait may be pretty topologically complicated thing. And the projection of this guy is this one. So what happens, we start here, an expanding branch, and as soon as we are reaching this hole, we're going to another branch and start to collapse. The universe with a negative potential eventually recollapsed, always recollapsed. And we are not precluding that our universe will be not recollapsing, because the negative potential actually not exceptional in string theory. The closed string tachyon sometimes is modeled with the potential, which is negative. Gauge supergravity is dealing with the negative potentials. And the potential of the scalar field may be easily like that, positive today, 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 but in the future goes back. And if you remember textbooks on cosmology, that our future may be either a very fast expansion or marginal expansion, depending on the amount of matter, it's missing one of the possibility, which comes only from the theory of the scalar field. It may have recollapsed. Right. Okay, I finished with this, and the next thing is to recall the story of the Penrose diagrams. We were talking about Penrose diagrams yesterday, and we have now evolution of the universe with the scalar field with inflation, and we want to see how Penrose diagram look like. So how we construct Penrose diagram? First, we have to equip ourselves with a solution. And we know full solution. We take typical trajectory, not this one, but the good one, with which ends with the oscillation of the scalar field, right? And the Penrose diagram looks like the following. So we equipped ourselves with a flat universe. We have singularity at the beginning. And we have a Friedman flat universe. And we have already Penrose diagram this yesterday. It has singularity in the past, which corresponds to singularity of the scalar field over here. And it has a nice infinities typical for expanding universe today. And there are time slices, and they are idle coordinates. And it has nothing to do with the Penrose diagram that drew yesterday or the Sitter universe, even if you take open slice. What happens? There is inflation, there is a local de Sitter space time, but the global property has nothing to do is what people are drawing for de Sitter space-time. What is the answer? When it, we lost de Sitter properties here. Okay, the answer is the following. This hypersurface, suppose this hypersurface corresponds to the end of inflation. And the scalar field is oscillating here, like that. This is a time hypersurface when inflation ends. And from those oscillations of the scalar field, radiation is created in the process of preheating or reheating. It's end point of inflation. So we can draw event horizon associated with this point. We also can draw apparent horizon. An apparent horizon, which goes like that. So this is how apparent horizon goes in Friedman universe. This is how apparent horizon goes in the universe with a stiff equation of state. And this is how apparent horizon goes in quasi-exponential expansion. The property of inflation are catched by apparent horizon. In the structure, the global structure does not catch in properties of de Sitter, but the structure of apparent horizon and the event horizon, which is associated with the end of inflation, they are locally here. We say, as we have it for observer here, this is horizon, if you remember from yesterday, that's event horizon and apparent horizon. for example, the Sitter universe. So this piece and that piece, they're similar. This is how we catch geometrical property, but not globally. Right. That was a generic consideration. Now we turn to inflationary models. So we finished with the generic property of the scalar field. Now we'll talk about inflation. What we want? We want to have inflation which is derived from first principles. For 20 years, people were suggesting simple models of inflation. The picture was very different back in the early 80s. And the most realistic and, in a sense, the best model was the model, so-called new inflationary model. The new inflationary model deals with the potential this type, which was associated with SU5 grand unification model. We will be happy with model of inflation when it goes in package with a good particle physics and when it will be in good agreement with all observational tests, of course. So package is the key word here. And back in 1982, that was a very good package because SU5 was a very good candidate for unification of particles. And it naturally gave an inflation and the scalar field was slowly rolling down. And at this stage, all of those equations I discussed before were used and generated inflation. Unfortunately, to make it compatible with observations, there is a specific parameter lambda which for this Coleman-Weinberg model was order of 1/10, but it should be order of 10 to the minus 13 to satisfy observational data. The only trouble was it's a very different parameter. Otherwise, it's a very good model. And after that, the name of the game was to suggest a simple economic model with a minimal number of parameters. And chaotic inflationary models were constructed for monotonic potentials. What can be more natural than m squared phi squared potential? It's very natural. To make it compatible with observations, the mass here should be 10 to the minus 5 of the Planckian mass. And it's not bad. It's it's a gut scale. It's close to the gut scale. Another potential of this type was lambda 5 to the 4. Again, pretty natural potential. To make it compatible, we need lambda relatively small, 10 to the minus 13. And it will be nice to get small numbers from string series. And for instance, if we are playing with the brain inflation in the throats, and if we are building up cosmology within superstring theory and using the throat solution, warping solution for inner dimensions, and we're considering brain anti-brain interaction here, there is an interesting solution which gives us a lambda 5 to the 5 model. And lambda in this model is inversely proportional to m multiplied by k, when m and k are associated with the charges of the fluxes in this model. To make this close to the 10 to the minus 13, we need those numbers too large. On the other hand, there is a constraint on the topology of Calabi-Yau, which does not allow those numbers to be very, very big. And anyway, we are so far missing many orders of magnitude. But this is the way how the model building within string theory goes. So we want to get, we're getting those models which as a prototype we already have in the field theory, and we want to get their parameters. power law inflation. It turns out if we have potential, which is exponentially depending on scalar field, which is good because dilaton field in string theory goes like that. And for this potential, we get cosmological solution, power law, but kappa and pi and p are related. And to have inflation, we need this index to be order of 10 or larger. Unfortunately, we cannot get it in the potential with a dilaton because the number here is fixed. So this is why it was so difficult to build up inflation in string theory without brains. Another type, this is all potentials with a single field, economic. It's nice. It's most, it's economic, only one field. But life is more maybe more complicated. And a potentially interesting model is to have so-called hybrid inflation. So the rule of thumb is there are many models which were invented by many people, but only those invented by Andre Linde as staying. Right, so I have a genealogical tree of inflationary models, how it goes every decay. There are so many of them, just got lost. And what you do, you take, I even will not bother to promise. Every new wave of particle physics brings new model building in inflation. The hybrid inflation, I can write down the formula, but better to do it pictorially. The hybrid inflation deals with two fields, and the potential has two directions. This is sigma direction, and this is phi direction. Higgs direction and then photon direction. And the potential has a valley and minimum above some critical point, and then is bifurcating and became a potential is two minimum below this point. And again, it's a just a simple model which has a very nice string theory prototype. If we have brain and antibrain, I believe Henry Tai was covering this material. We have antibrain, D3, and brain. And while they are far from each other, they're approaching each other because they are attracting. And four-dimensional effective theory with this potential is reminiscent of rolling along this valve. So I write down the projection. It will be phi direction and sigma direction. So we're initially moving over here. And when brains are very close to each other, the scale of the string sizes, the brain antibrain annihilate and disappear. And it's like we are moving suddenly in another direction and pump energy into another component. And in this case, analogy stops because brain antibrain gives us close string excitations. And here we have just another scalar field. But in fact, actually, all the energy is burst into radiation immediately after we leave this bifurcation point. So anyway, the hybrid inflation is a good prototype of what is going on in string theory. What we calculate from for inflation, when we have a model, so pick up your favorite model. We calculate the duration of inflation. We need duration of inflation. And in all of those examples, the scalar field is slowly rolling from top to down. And when we have slow roll inflation, you know what I'm looking for, right? I cannot find it. If we have slow roll inflation, things are changing slowly. Scalar field is changing slowly. Phi dot dot is much less than 3H phi dot. The scalar factor of the universe is quasi-exponentially changing with time. And we call this a number of e-foldings. It shows how significantly it goes. So number of e-folding is dt over h. Right. What I do with this? From, I can write down, I can multiply by d phi and divide it by d phi. And what I'll get, d phi h divided by phi dot. On the other hand, from the equation 3h phi dot is equal minus derivative of the potential. If I ignore acceleration, phi dot dot, immediately I will get phi dot. So phi dot will be expressed through another Hubble and derivative here and what else? Three. Factor of three somewhere. After that, I use Einstein equations and 3h squared will be 8 pi m Planck square of the potential because phi dot kinetic term is small and is substituted here. And what I get at the end, I get that for the slow roll inflation, the number of folding is equal 8 pi m Planck d phi v of phi real phi derivative. If I take those models, like m squared phi square or lambda phi to the 4, I will see that duration of inflation does not depend on parameters m or lambda. I need them not very big, just to ensure that we have slow roll. But it's not duration of inflation which requires small parameters. And if I substitute, if I take derivative substitute, it will contain the answers depending on the initial value of the scalar field in Planckian units. Etc. So the only parameter for the chaotic inflationary models, including this hybrid because it has a chaotic part, which defines number of e-folding, is initial value of the scalar field. And the initial value of the scalar field should be larger than phi of the Planckian mass to give us number of e-folding for order 65, which we like. The parameters like this condition and that condition, they came from another piece of physics. They came from the condition that fluctuations generated from inflation are not very large and actually exactly what they needed to be to explain observational data. How mandatory is the condition that inflation should be slow roll condition? This is a very important question for the string theory. Remember that the generic Lagrangian for the scalar field also have this term, psi r phi squared. And we take psi is equal to zero, minimally coupled. And all of those formulas, all of those theories I described are valid for minimally coupled scalar field. But there are serious arguments to think that when we do string cosmology, psi is corresponds to conformal coupling. And if in its special task to avoid the presence of conformal coupling, we need to twist the model significantly to make it not conformal. Uh, Let me remind you the property of the conformal scalar fields. If I have this Lagrangian box of phi, this is a covariant box, it is a potential, psi r phi 1 6. This is now my equation. So let me take, let me remind you these properties when we have no potential at all. We have massless scalar field which is conformally coupled. So in this case, if I make conformal transformation of metric, I'm going to another metric. I can transform my scalar field by the same conformal factor. And this equation will jump to the equation now constructed in the conformally mapped metric with new term. And in cosmology, I can take this metric to be flat and omega be a scalar factor, right? It's my conformal flat cosmological metric. For flat metric, R is equal to 0. I have a very simple formula, right? So I can play it to get rid of this term in the conformally flat metric. It's just reminiscent what happens. In terms of equation for the scalar field, conformal coupling changes things. Phi dot dot plus 3h phi dot plus V of phi. And here will be contribution L phi squared. And for De Sitter geometry, R is a 12h squared, will be term 2h squared phi is equal to 0. So I have extra term, and this extra term corresponds to extra contribution to the mass. So my inflaton field became massive effectively. And the massive field is not small mass. It's a mass comparable with the Hubble. It's not small mass. Everything will be pretty different. And it turns out that in this case, during inflation, phi dot is close to h phi, and it's not slow roll condition anymore. For this, dot dot is comparable with 3h phi dot, right? We don't have slow roll conditions anymore. The question is, can we have inflation when we have slow roll condition broken, when our field is running quickly? I want to stress that this is a burning question for string cosmology. Let me give you context. I'm talking about the material, which is new and even not published. And it's related to the string cosmology. The context is the following. We have a warping geometry, like Lyapunov-Strassmann geometry or EDS geometry, with some extra pieces. And we have in this road D-brain and anti-D-brain interacting. And the interaction of those brains are described by the potential, the distance, radial distance in this road, R, is associated with the inflaton field. And this potential has the form of this type. I believe Henry Tai was covering this material. So the potential for this scalar field looks like this type of the potential. A phi naught corresponds to the radial distance very close to order of the string size. And V naught in phi naught are parameters which came out from this geometry. V the overall geometry, as I said, locally has the form of the ADS rod, and I will write it in those coordinates. R is the ADS radius, and here is my four-dimensional geometry. This is my four-dimensional geometry, plus R naught squared ds. So the scalar field is associated with coordinate R. When we are considering four-dimensional effective field theory, this is a potential which appears as a theory. But besides of this potential, basically due to the ADS-CFT correspondence, the theory also contains conformal coupling. And therefore, we have to work with this potential for the scalar field. With this equation for the scalar field, including this big mass. And the potential should be substituted there. And it turns out that this equation for this potential can be solved. And solution shows that the scalar field is rolling almost as constant divided by the scalar factor. It's decreasing. And differentiating this, I get this condition, right? So this condition is this generic result. And for particular potential, which emerges in string theory, it's derived immediately. So this equation became nonlinear equation, but numerical solutions shows this type of the behavior. And when I want to calculate number of refolding, now what I have, number of refolding, dt multiplied by h. And I replace h with phi dot over phi, which is d phi over phi, which is log phi. So number of folding is now defined by the range of phi in the problem. So remember, it came from antecedent geometry. Substituted here, I'll get delta y interval. And this construction has the spirit of Randall-Sundrum construction. And if I want to have low energy physics at the end of the day when brains are colliding and annihilating, if I say that my low energy physics end of inflation corresponds to TeV scale, and this portion corresponds to the Plancken scale, I need the hierarchy, solving hierarchy in other words. And the distance here to solve the hierarchy can be translated in those numbers, and I get here number of folding around 37. So 37, this is number of folding. I'm getting more or less naturally in the string theory construction with conformal coupling. Is it bad or it's good? So it's contradict, of course, this number 65. But let us recall that the number 65 is absolutely not mandatory. And let us reveal the origin of this number 65. So how many foldings we need in reality? The formula is the following. The number of folding to explain homogeneity of our universe is 62 minus natural log 10 to the 16 GeV. The energy corresponds to God's scale, divided by the scale of inflation, energetic scale of inflation, 1/4, minus some small corrections due to the details of reheating, et cetera, et cetera. So this formula, 62, was derived assuming that the scale of inflation is the gut scale, 10 to the 16 GeV. The basic ingredients are the following. So we need to know the expansion of the universe. Now we know that the relics photons, they're expanding like inverse of the scalar factor. And therefore, this range of the scalar factor can be found, how much scalar factor expanded, if we compare temperature of photons today to the temperature of the photons, if we trace them back just immediately after inflation. The temperature of the photons at the end of inflation, right? -1. So temperature of the photons today is 3 degrees of Kelvin. So 1 Kelvin is about 10^-4 electron volt. End of inflation is, if I take it number 10^16, the temperature and energy are related through some prefactors, it will be 10^14 GeV. And if I take everything into account, I will get the number of a folding corresponding to 62. So this number basically came from estimation of the redshift of photons and how much the scalar factor expanded if we have this number. But in this picture, we may have inflation at low energies. And in cosmology, no one precluded to have inflation at low energies, as low as TeV scale. Inflation cannot be lower than MeV scale, because nucleosynthesis happens at those scales. But TeV scale is fine. And if I take TeV scale, substitute here, I'll get the number of inflation needed only 33, less than this number which I'm getting. The bottom line is that conformal interaction not necessarily spoil inflation. It makes scalar field rolling very quickly, and we need special conditions to have a significant span of the range of the scalar field. And the warping geometry gives us such a possibilities. It's just an illustration of this very important point for the string cosmology. What happens if we have a conformal interaction is that fluctuations in this field cannot be generated. And we need another mechanism for this inflation. But there is another mechanism. And if we'll have time at the end, I will mention it. So I'm more or less finished with inflationary models. And now, check how much time left. So about half an hour, right? Now we're going to consider the part of inflationary cosmology which is much more interested for astronomers than anything else. Because we're going to talk about fluctuations generated from inflations. And the fluctuations from inflations, they lead to the fluctuations of the homogeneous cosmic microwave background, which we can observe, to inhomogeneities in galaxies, which we can observe. And fluctuations, they have spectrum. Fluctuations exist at the scale of megaparsecs, 10 megaparsecs, 100 megaparsecs. It's not one number, it's a function. And function has much more information than one number. So far, when we're talking about background geometry, the only number which came for cosmology is omega is equal 1. Total density is 1, only one number. But spectrum gives us functions. And functions has a lot of information. So there is much more information from this than from anything else. And we hope that fundamental theory of inflation, the fundamental theory will set up on the modeling of inflation. Maybe there will be imprints, but those imprints of string theory through inflation will be seen in fluctuations. Therefore, the theory of cosmological fluctuations is a holy grail for string cosmology in principle. So, we turn now to inhomogeneities, how fluctuations are generated. The picture, remember, I was critical to this picture, which has a heuristic sense. And this is time. And we learned yesterday that wavelengths of fluctuations are increasing with the scalar factor, and they are entering the horizon today. So this is our cosmology. We are living here. This is our horizon. We see fluctuations entering, and this is why. So if we don't have inflation, cut off this one, then we have fluctuations entering horizon, and there is non-explained physical mechanisms, how they were originated with the scales, which exceed the causally connected patch in the past. That was a puzzle in Friedman cosmology. So with inflation, this puzzle is resolved. We know that now particle horizon, because of the de Sitter stage, is much bigger, and we are in causal contact with much bigger space. When we have cosmology, we have to consider fluctuations of everything. We have to disturb everything and to see how gravitational system is reacting on those vibrations, fluctuations. And the first object is, before I'm going to metric fluctuations and type of metric fluctuations, I will talk about much simpler object, which is more familiar to theoretical physics, is the fluctuations of the scalar field. So my scalar field has a background component plus fluctuating component. And we are considering fluctuations and where they came from, those fluctuations. We shall consider vacuum fluctuations. And let's take, again, the simple case of the massive scalar field. And remember what we're doing. We do quantization. So we take, so this is delta phi, small fluctuations. We quantized. We promoted to be in the iterator. We quantized it, and we have integral overall modes. We have creation annihilation operators. We have time-dependent part of the eigenfunctions, and we're working with the basis with the plane waves, and there is a Hermitian conductor part is there's a real scalar field. And so those fluctuations are in this room, and we calculate things like phi square after regularization, it's zero. And T mu nu of the scalar field in the flat space-time is zero. Okay, good. Inflation is not in flat space-time. It's close to de Sitter space-time. So let's consider how scalar field looks like if we put it in de Sitter geometry, pure de Sitter geometry. And it's a subject of intense study of 1970s with great discoveries by many, Bunch Davis, notably Gibbons Hawking, that we have interesting effects. If we are working in the static patch of de Sitter, then as the middle observer will see the flux of the thermal radiation, and it prompt to think about hot tin can picture of de Sitter. Bunch and Davis calculated the average of the fluctuations for pure de Sitter geometry, and they obtained famous formula. And actually, they obtained formula for arbitrary coupling with gravity. But they didn't consider it, and it was absurd to consider that time the case when mass is very small of the field, because it's diverging exponentially. Somehow, cosmologists are strange people. They're going for special cases. Omega is one. Is one example. Our universe somehow lives we are living in the universe with omega is equal to 1. If you look textbooks on cosmology before 1980s, 70-something, they practically don't consider the case of the flat universe because it's such a marginal case, right? And the case of very small mass, it's also such an exotic case. Why should we bother with this? Somehow, the universe is picking up exactly those cases. So if you need a recipe how to advance in your career, just consider strange cases. Anyway, so we formally cannot take this limit, right? It gives us absolute result. And we understand why, because the contribution came from infrared modes. And if we're dealing with a hot tin can picture of static patch, we can see physics within the Hubble volume H minus 1. And those modes would be well outside and not catched by this physics. Therefore, it take a while and came from a very different perspective to understand the result for vacuum averages for fluctuations of the scalar field, quantum field series, curve space-time, for this special case. And to work with this, we have to go to different, to the cosmological slice of DC3 universe. I'm going to this slice of DC3 universe. And we will consider now quantum field theory of this type in this slice. And we will treat this problem, what happens with the fluctuations in this case. So what I'm going to talk is the basis for the theory of generation of cosmological fluctuations, the basis for the theory of generation of gravitons from inflation. It's very, very important piece. We know equation, and equation is box phi, covariant equation. I yesterday was advocating to use conformal time. And when we use conformal time, then equation for the scalar field fluctuations will be simply d d tau square plus k square. K will be Camoing momentum. I already did Fourier decomposition or quantum field theory. Decomposition is the same. I'm considering modes. There is a term a prime prime over a, which is in this equation after I'm using conformal time, plus m square a square. And all of this is acting on my fluctuation mode as a function of tau and multiply by scalar factor, right? I have to make this rescaling here. This is equal to 0. So I'm considering here the case of conformal, minimally conformal fields. If it's not minimally conformally coupled, the mass will require contribution from H squared this time. Okay, and we are working in pure de Sitter background, and scalar factor is H minus tau. Okay, so we substitute this scalar factor here and here, and what we get is d tau square, this term, plus k square, plus minus 2 plus m square, h square. H is a constant, it's a pure de Sitter, divided by tau square. And this is a phi k is equal to 0. And this is a Bessel equation. The Bessel equation is usually the solution of the Bessel equation will be given in Bessel functions, Hankel function of first or second order, these coefficients nu, argument k tau, and coefficient nu is defined in the following way. This combination, the full combination, should be equal minus nu square minus 1/4 over tau square. So if we equalize this to that, you calculate nu, and I have two linearly independent solutions. And I have to look at the asymptotics of the Bessel function to see which one to pick up. My answer will be the following. It will be square root of pi over 2, Hubble parameter, tau in power 3/2, absolute value, because it's h of nu, the first type, argument chi tau. This is my solution. So this is a Hankel function. In index nu is equal 9/4 minus mh squared. And we want to keep this small to be less than 3/2. And why we pick up exactly this solution, this Bessel function? Because in the asymptotics of very large tau, the very large tau corresponds negative tau to the past of this problem, we have good initial conditions. We have, in this case, asymptotics for this function for tau goes to infinity, minus infinity, in the past. This solution, FK, will behave like quantum modes, 2k e ik tau, as a positive frequency solution, which corresponds to the vacuum initial conditions. So if we start with the vacuum initial conditions in the past, our solution will evolve to this piece. And to see where it evolves, we have to take another asymptotic of the Bessel function. We have to take asymptotic for tau going to zero, because tau goes from minus infinity to zero to cover this space-time. And if I'll do this, I'll get the following result. My function goes to the constant value. And this constant value is a Hubble parameter divided by square root of 2k in power 3/2. So the origin of h is clear. So I cease to oscillate. I saturated at the constant value. And scalar factor is a dimension thing. And only dimension in the problem is the Hubble parameter. So therefore, it's very natural to get h. Spectrum is so-called flat spectrum. Why we call it a flat spectrum? Because if I consider d3k, this is now expression for my variance over 2 pi, et cetera, et cetera. So it happens that d3k and square of this will be k cubed. So this thing is practically independent on which decade of k I take. So the contribution of all harmonics into integral is the same. So however, when I take this integration, I have to take into account that I take into account here. So I have this solution, substitute there, and I automatically will get this, that only harmonics, this type of contribution came only from the harmonics, which are already saturated at this regime. And it happens when k tau is equal to unity, right? So now the reading of the result. Now the reading of the result. The solution in terms of physical time, t, goes like oscillations. At some moment, it stops to oscillate and stays as a constant. this moment is k tau is equal 1. But I recall that tau is h divided by scalar factor. So in other words, when the following conditions takes place, then k is equal scalar factor multiplied by h. So a is changing with time, and therefore, for different modes, this moment will be different. For one mode, this moment is here. For next mode, this moment, this moment, this moment. Each nick of time, and new modes are frozen out. They're frozen out, and they look like a classical scalar field, which is not oscillating anymore. And the amplitude is h. If I take now and add them together, so this mode existed, so next mode adds at the top, next mode adds on the top, et cetera, et cetera. And altogether, it contributes to the linear growth. And the integral of this type goes like h cubed 4 pi over t. So my fluctuations are growing with time. I have more and more and more and more harmonica getting out of this. If I now recall that there is some mass m, a little bit, the story is a little bit changing. The individual mode will freeze out, but it will be slightly decreasing with time. And new mode will coming, and again, slightly decreasing with time. And in the far future, it turns out that the accumulation of modes and the decrease altogether is reducing to the Banach-Davis formula. So things are converged, but interpretation is the following. If we are living together with the De Sitter spacetime, we see how the fluctuations of the scalar field are unfolding. They're spilling out of the horizon. Why is it spilling out of the horizon? Because before this condition met, when k is less than kh, the wavelength of fluctuations is less than inverse Hubble parameter. At this moment, when fluctuations stop oscillating and freeze out, the wavelength of fluctuations is larger than the size of the horizon. And if we go to the picture of Penrose diagram, it was yesterday here. So this is how time goes. And as far as my fluctuations, the wavelengths of physical fluctuations reaching the event horizon goes out, fluctuations stop and freeze out. And all overall, the global picture, this is how it's unfolding in time. In terms of this special picture, we have inflationary universe. And here, my horizon, my fluctuations are spilling out and contributes as a classical field. And I'm here inside horizon, cannot see. For me, this fluctuation looks like a homogeneous component. But for the meta observer, it looks like a fluctuations. Next moment of time, another fluctuations is added to this, and added next, and overall, I will have a global picture looking like a random Gaussian field, because each mode, which is exiting the horizon, contributes to the total picture with random faces, and it's reminding of the random walking altogether. So the global geometry will be more and more and more inhomogeneous at large scales. This is how fluctuations of the scalar field is generated. 5 minutes. It's not geometry yet. Now we have to recall that scalar field is talking to metric, and if I have fluctuations of the source, my scalar field is time dependent plus inhomogeneous component. I have to substitute this in the Einstein equations and to see what will be response in geometry. As far as fluctuations are small, I can use linearization of the Einstein equations. And the metric fluctuations should be introduced. And there are zillions of ways to write down metric fluctuations in expanding universe, because gravity is a gauge theory. We can use different gauges. But fortunately, there is very elegant ways to do it in the gauge invariant formalism, and it takes hours to go into details. Bottom line is, I like personally the gauge, which is called longitudinal gauge, which operates with two scalar functions, phi and psi. And moreover, if you're dealing with the scalar field, it turns out that phi is equal to psi. And at the end of the day, we have only one scalar field, capital phi, which describes metric fluctuations in the universe. And it's completely described metric fluctuations, a scalar metric fluctuations, which are making our universe inhomogeneities. There is a general theory of cosmological fluctuations. We can consider gravitational type fluctuations. It will correspond to the gravitational waves. And so we have to linearize Einstein equations and consider theory of gravitational waves at de Sitter background. We can consider vector fluctuations. Turns out that vector fluctuations never generated in four-dimensional inflation. Interesting question, if we evoke extra dimensions, if fluctuations can be generated. And actually, the way when I think string theory may enter into cosmology is to see how the theory of cosmological fluctuations is enriched if here I add also the piece associated with other dimensions. And we have to take into account now fluctuations of the shape and space moduli field with other fields, and to see if those guys somehow will fill extra dimensions, form fields, fluctuations. Very interesting thing. Anyway, let's go back to four-dimensional geometry. We can write down linearized Einstein equations, and they are lengthy, and because many terms, terms like this one, phi plus 3h phi dot plus 3h square phi. This is 0, 0. Einstein equations, 4 pi g, now the sources. Now I take fluctuations in energy momentum tensor, and the terms are phi derivative of the potential delta phi plus phi dot minus capital F phi dot. So this is linear term, linear term, linear term, all linear terms, right? This is 0, 0 Einstein equations. Very nice 0, 1 equation in this one. A phi dot square 4 pi dot derivative in respect this time. And there is another equation. It's very boring. But what we're dealing with? We're dealing with two interacting oscillators. One oscillator is delta phi, and another oscillator is capital phi. So we can go to the Lagrangian, perturb Lagrangian, see there delta phi and capital phi, and try to diagonalize Lagrangian. And it turns out that there is a remarkable variable, u, which was found by Slava Mukhanov. If we introduce this variable, then the Lagrangian of the perturbed system, scalar field, and gravity can be diagonalized. And there is only one equation, second order equation of the Schrödinger type, which in the conformal time looks like oscillator equation with the potential, which is remarkably simple. All of this mess is reduced to simple, elegant Schrödinger type equation where zeta is a combination A phi dot divided by H. So they are background values. You take your background cosmology, you substitute solutions here, you put it there. For each mode, you have this solution, and you know how your mode behave. For those who like Schrödinger equation, this is what happens. So I can write down an effective, this looks like an effective potential for the Schrödinger equation as function of tau. And this potential typically looks like that. And for initial moment of time, this combination is very small. It corresponds to oscillator behavior in the past to these initial conditions for the scalar field fluctuations. So I have this type of things. And it corresponds to incoming solution, EK tau, right? Only incoming solutions. And after that, we go in Cantor barrier. And to have only incoming solution, I have a decaying and growing solution. And of course, growing solution is most interesting. And this growing solution corresponds to freezing out over here. But now we're dealing with another object. U is now related to both a collective degree of freedom. So U cannot exist without gravity. So this is collective degree of freedom. The bottom line is that the metric fluctuations, as we know it, the spectrum of the metric fluctuations, phi k squared, this one which enters here, is given by uk divided by zeta square, taking at the moment k is at ah. So zeta is this background combination. Uk is solution of this equation in asymptotic when tau is very small to the end of inflation, and this is the answer. So it's almost analytic, depending on the details, of course. U is not, U is initially oscillating for a given k, and then freezes out. And it's never equal to zero in the late time asymptotics. Mm-hmm. Not anymore. It's not free field anymore. So delta phi here is not described by simple equations I did before. It's a delta phi, which is involved in messy equations like that. So you have to forget what you did when you consider a scalar field as a probe field at given De Sitter background. So now you're treating it as the mode coupled to gravity. So this now has no simple reading. It has no simple reading anymore. So all information is in this equation. This is a basic. You quantize this field. You quantize this field U. It is the answer for the metric fluctuations. It is the answer for the metric fluctuations. Right. So I practically finished. At the end of inflation, we have inhomogeneities of matrix. This is not the only mechanism of metric fluctuations. Fortunately, we have more possibilities. We may have, the story of scalar field is very generic. If we have scalar field, which is conformal, this scalar field is conformal. The old formalism doesn't work. And at the end, we don't have metric fluctuations at all. Unfortunately, there are other mechanisms. And one of them is so-called modulated cosmological fluctuations. And it's based on the fact that the story of the scalar field, any light scalar field, is absolutely universal. So if you have inflationary universe, if you have any light field, not necessarily inflaton by itself, inflaton may be heavy, but any light fields, they are inevitably produced during inflation, like that. This picture is absolutely universal for any light field, light moduli field. And if you have your inflationary models such that the endpoint of inflation can be modulated by some other moduli scalar fields, then you have fluctuations which are not generated during inflation, but generated at the end of inflation, because the moduli field, they are produced, always produced inevitably at the end of inflation. And in the example I was talking about, string cosmology is a conformal field with this rod geometry. We have to recall that our geometry is not only ADS here, but it also contain a five-dimensional piece, for instance, S5. And brain and anti-brain, in terms of S5, not necessarily allocated at the same positions. And the angles of S5, as inflation unfolds, are actually working as a moduli field. And as a result, we have fluctuations of the position, angular position on this interior manifold of this scenario. And the inflation goes over here for the conformal field, but the end of inflation, very end, is how those two brains are finding each other on this S5 manifold. And this is an example of modulated cosmological fluctuations. Right. The fluctuations of geometry at the scale within the horizon give us a good thing. They're giving us inhomogeneities of metric, which we observed. This phi has a great meaning. It's a nothing but a Newtonian gravitational potential in astronomy that we have. It's a random Gaussian field. The voids in distribution of galaxies, they correspond to positive peak of this Newtonian gravitational potential. The clusters of galaxies corresponds to the minimum of this gravitational potential. And this random Gaussian field of gravitational potential is produced from inflation over here. And then it's just untouchable, practically untouchable, until it happens over here. Only details changing because of some physics with radiation inside. But outside of the horizon, it's untouchable. Local physics cannot touch things which are outside of the horizon. And this is why, even if we don't know details of microphysics in our universe, we know that fluctuations came from outside. We know that we are probing very early universe, right? The message is that we may not know microscopic physics of early universe, but we know that the cosmological fluctuations there are untouchable because they're very far outside of the horizon during this evolution. And last remark is, inflation not necessarily lasting 37 or 50, 30, 62 folding, and the chaotic models, it may be lasting for many, many, many foldings. And those fluctuations are building up for many, many, many e-foldings, and they make overall global geometries pretty inhomogeneous. And for those local inhomogeneities, Penrose diagram will be very, very different, and it will contain the patches associated with a different Friedman domain. So we're not necessarily ending up in our domain. There may be many other. This is a future part of the Penrose diagram. And there are hypersurfaces which corresponds to the heating in each Friedman domain. And we are not talking to each other literally. But because those domains are coming from the quantum fluctuations, the concept of classical Penrose diagram is ill-defined. So it's very similar to experiment with electrons. If you have a screen with a slit and another screen, there is another slit, and you have flux of the electrons, and you have an interference pattern of electrons over here, you don't know individual electron take which trajectory, which explicit classical trajectory. It's nonsense. So, and because quantum fluctuations in very early inflationary stages are responsible for those inter-homogeneities and different Friedmann domains, the classical Penrose diagram is not applicable. So we have to consider a stack of the Penrose diagram, which will be equivalent to the Feynman passes over here. So let me finish with this, and thank you.